From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. For much of this week and next, we'll be examining the state of high schools in North Carolina. And we'll hear from policy wonks and testing experts, parents and teachers. But today, we're going to hear from the special interest group that is the lifeblood of high schools, the students. Because in addition to making the grades, they spend every day in school navigating the social minefield that is just as complex as any AP calculus exam. So, how much has high school experience changed over the generations, and how much of what we hear in the news about the state of our high schools rings true with the students? Producer Katie Barron and I recently spent a couple of days with 10 teenagers who attend Durham's Riverside High School. Half of the students were underclassmen, half juniors and seniors. They came from a wide array of backgrounds, and many did not know each other before sitting down to our discussion. In order to offer the students some anonymity and to foster a candid discussion, the names you'll hear will not be their real names. They got to choose their own, fake names. So we thought we'd be talking about the stuff of teen movies, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but instead the conversation gravitated toward the more subtle pressures they face every day.
I think there definitely is a peer pressure. It's just such a cliche phrase now that it kind of bothers me, and I want to be like, no, it's not like that. But I think there definitely is something, although it's probably a little more obscure than just like drinking because you're around everybody else who's doing it or something like that.
So you could say something, say a joke or something like that because everyone's saying it. It doesn't have to be necessarily limited to drinking, smoking, or doing drugs.
Or just like laughing because everybody else is.
Yeah.
Being
part of the conformity.
Mm-hmm. Consensus. If you watch on TV, a lot of teenage shows, they show, like, if you look in the high school environment, it's like you see someone going in the bathroom and then it's a big girl or a big guy who walks in and is like, you need to smoke this.
Right.
In reality, you know that no one really goes up to you. Like,
yeah.
I watch it with my family and I'm like, I'm in high school. No one does that.
Yeah.
Or, why are you wearing this? Why are you wearing that? No.
No, it's not that blunt.
Nowhere near that. And I guess, like Wayne said, is basically a part of acceptance or, you know, not wanting to be different.
But how is that communicated, and how do you internalize that message? You know what I mean? So if it's not a big guy coming up and saying, hey, you can just take one puff. No, of course it doesn't happen like that. That's ridiculous. But how does it happen? I mean, you're saying there's something out there. It's a little more obscure. You're trying to put your finger on it.
They don't go out and tell you that you need to smoke this, but they talk about how such a good time that they've had with their friends doing mushrooms, smoking weed, and stuff like that. And, you know, you feel like you're left out of this little party, this little group, and, you know, they're not...
Because you want to have fun, too.
So yeah, and they're not telling you to go out, roll a joint, smoke a blunt, whatever. They're just telling you how much fun they had. They're just... It's a normal conversation for them, but for you, you have no clue at how to identify with what they're experiencing.
I don't know. Even that, I haven't really experienced all that much, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure it's legitimate, I'm sure it's out there, but it's not... It's never really... I don't know.
Do you ever feel, though, a pressure? On the one hand, you could say, express a certain curiosity and wonder if it could be, things could be better for me, more fun. But there's sort of another side of that which suggests that I'm really left out. I'm a nothing if I don't. I mean, have you ever felt that kind of pressure? Like, I got to get on board with this.
Not really, because it's really my own choice. And if I choose not to, then they can do whatever and I just do my own thing.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you ever feel pressure not to be a good kid or not to perform well? I mean, are you afraid of being a geek?
I think, yeah, I've never experienced like a pressure to not perform well. But I think what there is how it's sort of like a faux pas to be really passionate about something or like to really care about what you're learning, or to be interested in it, or like to, I don't know.
And this business of not showing passion is something I found in my 2 days of speaking with teenagers. I noticed a type of speech pattern that happened often. A student would say something profound and then immediately say, whatever, or I don't know, essentially dismissing what they had just said as if it wasn't important, this kind of dismissive speech and a refusal to speak declaratively or worse yet, imperatively about things that I found truly are important. So it's probably best not to be fooled by that dismissive quality. There are things that seemed important to me. Speech habits sometimes are long. There are awkward silences. You'll hear them throughout these conversations. They were to me as powerful in illuminating what it means to go to high school as what the students actually had to say. And as we said, these students attend Riverside High School in Durham. Riverside serves 1,900 students. It's a sprawling campus located in northwest Durham, considered by many to be among the better schools in the Durham public school system. SAT scores typically above the state and national averages. It is home to Durham County's only pre-engineering coursework. This is Principal Jim Keyes' second year at Riverside. He's had a long and accomplished background in teaching and school administration. One of the first things I noticed about Riverside was its diversity. Student body is 42% African American, 44% white, 12% Hispanic. The school acknowledges that there is an achievement gap among demographic groups, with the most glaring gap affecting Hispanic students. The combination of ethnic and socioeconomic diversity and a large student population results in an elaborate social stratification at Riverside, so you've got to wonder how much pressure there is to be popular. Now, popularity is a perennial burden for high schoolers, at least according to the formulaic teen movies, so I ask the younger students, do you feel pressure to be popular? And even if you don't, how big an effect does it have on other students?
I personally don't. I think it's good to know people, you know. Know a little bit of everybody. You'll end up, you know, knowing people anyway through classes, you know. Like last year, you know, I met a lot of people and, you know, I might not see them again, but, you know, I still know them. And, like, we kind of bonded and stuff like that. So you get to, like, through the years, you get to know, like, a lot of people, but you're not, I don't know if you're considered popular, like, I think popular people are, like, looked up to for, like, style or whatever and stuff like that. And I just, like, I wouldn't want to be popular personally.
What about that, Bob? Is that easy to dismiss popularity?
Kind of, sort of. Like, it's kind of easy to get popular, but it's not all that being popular. It's not all it seemed to be.
Well, take it from the other side. I mean, what about the sense that you're unpopular? I mean, isn't that the problem?
I guess you could get upset if you're not popular or known, but I guess it's not really that big of a deal. You just kind of go with your group and do what you want.
Joel?
I want to say, if you got the old friends right, and then when you go to another group, like, They really accept you because of how you wear stuff, like the style. But all friends like you, how you really are. So that's why I think I want to be popular.
Well, the freshmen and sophomores we spoke with at Riverside appeared to dismiss the notion of popularity. But when we had a similar discussion with the older group of students, a more complicated story about fitting in emerged. When I asked the older group what the lessons of high school are and how they affect their outlook on the future, this idea of fitting in came into focus.
Well, they're connected somehow. And that, you know, we feel like if we're safe in high school, if we're comfortable in high school, if we make it straight in high school, then it'll work out for the future. Which, you know.
You mean if you just get through, just do what it takes to get through?
Or, like, if you fit in high school, then...
Right.
It'll carry on to the future. And I think people who don't feel like if they don't fit in, you know,
is that one of the subtle lessons of high school, conformity, that not only are you learning calculus and history, but you're also learning to conform?
Conformity 101.
Well, 101, 202, 303, and 404, right?
Whatever then works, then. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's all 4 years. Yep. I mean, is that a fair statement?
It is, because, you know, a lot of people, when you feel like you're an individual, you're on a platform, you're there, the spotlight is on you, and you feel uncomfortable in it. And I think that's what the consensus view is, that you're uncomfortable in this spotlight. But there's really not that much reason to be uncomfortable, unless it's, you know, unless you're full-blown crazy with your underwear on your head. But, you know, if you're just passionate about something that's, you know, that's really, you know, that's really important and that you believe in, then there's no reason to feel embarrassed.
Well, pretty much piggybacking off of what Wayne said, it's pretty much you can do anything if you're very passionate about it, and it's all about the power of one.
Now, how many other people feel that way? And I guess what I'm trying to get is, I'm looking at you, I've heard what you've said, and you are in contact with more of the 2,000 people who go here than I am. Is that the prevalent feeling, the dominant feeling in this school at all?
Yeah. See, I think everybody, if they were asked that question, would be like, yeah, sure, I can make a difference. But nobody actually believes it enough to take action.
And some people just say yes for the reason, but yet they don't follow through about it. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of shames me about it, though. How can you say that you're willing to make a change knowing that you're just still stuck in your rut and still conforming to everyday society?
Students at Riverside High School in Durham talking about the kind of peer pressure we don't usually hear about in the after-school specials. When we come back, what these students have to say about school safety and their lives after high school. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. During this week and next, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, is presenting our special series, North Carolina Voices, Studying High School. You'll hear news reports every day from our news team during Morning Edition and All Things Considered. You'll also hear about high schools on this program, The State of Things. A couple of weeks ago, we spent some time with 10 students from Riverside High School in Durham. We wanted to find out what was on their minds besides the testing and the grades, what really it is like to go to high school these days. Now, when we left off, we were talking about peer pressure. And eventually, the conversation drifted to a topic many parents are concerned about, one that we frequently hear about in the news. That topic, of course, school violence. Just last month, students at Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado, dedicated a permanent memorial site for the 12 high school students and one teacher who were killed in the infamous 1999 shooting rampage. Since that bloody spring day in Colorado, high schools have never been the same. Riverside High School is 13 years old. It is designed a design that may be dated, but the school doesn't appear to be run down. It doesn't look untended or dangerous. When we visited, the entry hallway was adorned with a surprisingly good variety of student art projects. There were no metal detectors at the doors, but there are several police squad cars parked out front. That happens every day. Small contingent of officers patrol the school grounds and the school building. That happens every day. Cops are a common sight in public high schools these days. At Riverside, the police officers were my only cue that high school might be unsafe. So I asked the freshmen and sophomores directly, do you feel safe when you walk in this building?
Nah, not really. Just like, they don't like have security searches and stuff like that all the time. So students usually find out when they do have it, because it's just like they always talking about it. Then when they do have it, like, stuff don't happen, but then when they don't, stuff always seems to happen.
What kind of stuff happens?
Like, students might bring stuff to school, and the principal or teacher never know nothing about it.
What kind of stuff?
Like, guns, drugs, anything, knives, yeah.
So you know that there are people in school carrying weapons.
Yeah.
And how often are they used?
I'm not like really scared about people having weapons, because you know they're either not going to use it, or if they do, it's for like one reason, and you're probably not going to be affected by it. There's like a slight chance that they will actually use it.
You got a better chance of getting stabbed with a pencil than getting shot at school.
Well, how often does things like that happen? I mean, fights and that sort of thing, where no weapons involved.
Gossip. people start talking about stuff. Some people just can't take it and just go fight the person that was supposed to be talking about them.
Does it happen in the middle of class or lunch or after school?
Usually at lunch.
Yeah. Usually at lunch.
So everybody can see it.
Everybody stands up.
Yeah.
And again, how does that make you feel? I mean, do you feel scared about just coming to school? Is today the day I'm in the middle of a fight?
No.
Not really.
Because usually, like... Usually, like Bob said, it starts through gossip. So if you're not in the gossip, you're not going to be in the fight. Unless you're, like, running right, in between yeah. them. I mean, you don't run in between people when they're trying to beat each other up.
Do you get a sense that your teachers are scared to be here, that they're a little worried about their own safety?
No.
If they are, they hide it really well.
Yeah.
If they are, they hide it really well, you say?
Yeah.
You respect your teachers?
Yeah.
I feel you gotta give respect to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if
definitely.
If you don't respect a person, he ain't gonna respect you.
Mm-hmm. It's a good philosophy. I just wonder if there are some... And you don't have to name anybody, but if there are some teachers who you feel really haven't earned your respect.
Yeah, it's a lot. You just try to just get on your nerves sometimes.
When the classes get really boring, you're just like, come on, just stop talking, please, please. They don't, and then you just get irritated. Sometimes people say stuff they shouldn't.
You mean in class, students say stuff they shouldn't? Or the teachers say stuff?
The students.
Mm-hmm. What about the other part of that is, I mean, so just teachers can be boring and you're thinking, make them stop. Do you ever have a sense that this teacher doesn't have control of this classroom? That if somebody is carrying something in this classroom?
Yeah. Sometimes teacher might be teaching and then students might be talking and they just keep on teaching, won't ask them to be quiet or nothing.
Is that worrisome when students seem to get away with a lot in a classroom?
Yeah, and then when you do something, then they just write on you, like, be quiet, people don't say nothing, get out of my class. That's their favorite word, get out of my class.
You get thrown out of class. I mean, not you personally, but kids get thrown out of class a lot?
Yep.
Yes, a lot. I think, like, if teachers don't lay down the law at the beginning of the year, it's a loss for the rest of the, you know, well, semester now, but... Like, I think kids don't give respect to them because teachers aren't as firm at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why kids are the way they are.
What's your sense of how open-minded and how teachers are here, whether or not they are prepared psychologically, whether they're prepared to work with the diversity that I see in this school? That their backgrounds have made them ready to come into a place like this and treat everybody fairly. Quite honestly, what do you think?
Personally, I think that they just train the teachers to teach. They don't train them to like be along with the students and stuff like that. Like, I guess like they feel like if a student getting in their way, just put them out of class. They don't want to worry about the education, then they don't worry about it.
Well, here's the most recent data on school safety for North Carolina public schools. It's from the 2003-2004 school year. That report on school crime and violence says that the three most commonly reported criminal acts in high schools are possession of controlled substance, possession of a weapon, and possession of an alcoholic beverage. And that was consistent with what the students at Riverside High School told us. But there was no mention of gangs in the report. And from what you hear in the news, you might have the impression that gangs are running some of the schools in Durham. So I began my conversation about school safety with the juniors and seniors by asking them about gangs in school and whether that was a problem.
It really depends on what school you're at. Here, you hear about it, but you don't see it so much. You hear like, oh, you know, Duran, he's over there in a gang. And, you know, you hear about it, but you don't see gang violence that often. I mean, there's one or two fights, and that may or may not be the cause of them, but it really doesn't affect the day-to-day.
Yeah. And, okay, I was actually gone last semester. I wasn't at Riverside. And I heard about all these really bad gang things that had gone on at Riverside and how it was so dangerous, and I wanted to, like, come and visit and see, you know, like, see some of my friends, say hi when I'd gotten back. And they're like, no, you can't do that because... because the gangs, it has been permitted. But then I came and nothing had changed. And I've never felt in danger. And it just seems kind of ridiculous.
Maybe it's probably just perspective, probably by word of mouth. It could probably just be stretched out beyond limits. You know, there could be, like we hear, like I hear from some students, how there were some bad things going on in the Southern, even though it's in the newspapers. Though it could possibly be true, could possibly not.
One obvious difference is we did not have four squad cars in our parking lot every morning. We just didn't have to have that. I mean, apparently you've got an office set up here, right, for the police officers. They're in the building.
Well, in a post-Columbine world, you need something like that just in case. Because I'm guessing that, like, back in the 60s, 70s, you didn't hear as much about school shoots.
No, there wasn't that kind of thing. There was certainly violence, and there was certainly people getting beat up, and and bad things were happening. And maybe we should have had cops there. I don't know. But we didn't, and so it's a different feeling. And you can't compare, but I just wonder what that does to you every day when you have to walk past four squad cars to go to school.
Yeah,
it's an everyday.
It's really weird.
When you first get here, it's weird. Because when I came from Carrington, you know, there's one police officer, and, you know, he was just there off duty to make sure no one gets in a fight in the lunchroom. And when I first arrived at Riverside, I'm like, I see four squad cars. I'm like, well, who shot somebody? And then I realized that they're just here because it's a bigger school. There's more ground that they have to cover. And as these past 4 years have gone on, you know, they're just a daily occurrence. And it's, I don't even register it anymore. When there's a giant, like, paddy wagon outside, I'll register that.
It's funny because I think they're supposed to be there to keep the school safer. But I think that, honestly, it doesn't really do that. And that it just makes people get used to the idea that there is violence at the school and, like, expect that, and
well,
I think that
ends
up
aware.
I mean, it's good that they have them here because, you know, when the big stuff does break out, they'll be here. So
yeah, and I try to get away.
And when you listen to these kids talk the way they've been talking about violence, you have to ask yourself, how inevitable is violence in high school, and do the students feel empowered to stop it? So I asked them that directly. I said, do you feel capable of doing anything about school violence?
That's kind of a tough one.
Because at the center of this question is whether or not you, sitting here, ever have the capacity to solve this kind of problem, or whether you, sitting here, are always going to have to rely on some authority. In other words, is this hopeless? Can you not do anything about it? Well, and if you can't do anything about it today, then maybe you can never do anything about it. Do you have this power?
I guess that depends on the respect. Because I'm the commander in ROTC, and I have to deal with all the problems that happens in there. Mm-hmm. That's like a school, but, you know, it's not as big as
it's like
2,000 people. But I'm in charge of the ones fixing all the problems when people fight and all that stuff. I'm in charge. But I guess I earned their respect, so they have to do, I guess I'm the authority in ROTC. So they have to listen what I'm telling them to do. So now,
why do they respect you? How did you get that respect?
How did I get their respect? Well, I guess you start with the freshmen, you know, tell them this is what's up. You lay everything out. And if they don't respect the rules and if they don't do what you tell them to do, there's consequences. And you can't just say, okay, I'm going to suspend you, and then afterward forget about what you said. You have to stay with your word. I guess that's the way you earn respect. Because if you tell them to do something, and this is the rules, the way you're going to do it, that's the way they're going to do it.
So there's at least one example of something you can do. So then, again, back to the original question, do you have the power to deal with these kinds of root problems that apparently are going to be with you and us for the rest of our lives? We're not going to do away with violence. So how are we, or do we always hire somebody to come in and solve that problem for us?
I don't think that there will really be an end to violence ever, in my opinion, because it's a matter of a mental thing between whoever the conflict is within. And it's like, unless they are open to hear each other or allowing the other person to maybe vent out what they need, you know, and then them venting out theirs, instead of actually physically doing something or even verbally sometimes. If you can, like you said, handle it at the root, I think it will decrease, but I don't believe that it will ever end because of different things like that. Some people aren't willing to do that. And if we can't ever get the world in general like that, it won't ever happen.
Yeah, some people are usually resistant to change.
Well, I'm not sure about perfect peace or anything ideal like that. But
you can decrease it, though.
Yeah, but I think we absolutely can make a difference because, I mean, essentially we are the problem. Like, it's the students we're talking about, and that's who we are. So if everyone were, you know, to get in on it together, that's all we really need.
That's the thing, though. Not everybody thinks, let's say, like us.
Yeah.
Because that's about the ROTC thing. Well, I had the problem last year. They didn't really, I had the most terrible kids. Like, they had attitude problems. They had everything, especially the girls. They had drama. I had people come talk to me. It was all about the drama. And the thing is, I was like, why don't you change? Why don't you think about it this way? And not everybody thinks the same. That's the thing. That's why the violence will never end. Not everybody can think, oh, we can do this. We're the problem, so we have to stop. Yeah, they're not thinking like that. Yeah.
To what extent, though, does having everybody from the outside impose order reinforce the idea that, well, it's not us. We're not the problem. Yeah. See what I'm saying? In other words, you keep getting told that you're not the problem.
Exactly. It makes you feel like you have something to defy or like to fight against instead of yourself.
So could you bring it down? You're talking about, well, we know we're not going to end it, but would you bring it down to a manageable level? In other words, could you have a substantial impact on the root causes of trouble in the school?
I'm sure if we tried hard enough, we could. I mean, but it's a complicated thing because, Liz was saying, not everybody thinks the way that other people do, and you know that's kind of how what we pride on as humans, that we have individuality. But you know, some people just need to understand what that individuality can lead to violence. Sometimes it's just better to find a common ground or just agree to disagree and walk away.
I mean, the reason I ask all this is because at the center of this is what you're bringing into your adulthood, your sense of how much power you have. So I'm very curious to sort of quiz you on what sense of effectiveness you think you own already, and whether or not you're just going to keep, you know, be in these situations where you look around and see who's going to protect you and then do your part, or do you think you're an engine of change? Impact do you think you can have?
We can change it if we get all the people that think like us.
You think that's a requirement?
I don't think that you have to make someone think like you think. I think it's really that you have to be an example and stick to being an example for other people. If you're an example for someone else, they may see or understand. They may not agree with everything that you're doing, but they may see that there is a way that we can get along. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, just like I said, you just have to learn how to be an example. It's complicated. Because it's complicated to be different or, you know, to be by yourself sometimes because you can't always be with everyone. You can't always follow the crowd. If everyone jump off the cliff, you can't jump off the cliff just because everyone is jumping. But it's just, you know, if someone says, well, I'm staying up, it's bound to be another person who's going to say, I ain't jumping neither. So I guess it's just a part of having a leadership attitude about things.
Yeah, I think it can be done.
It could if we want to.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about thinking creatively, because the human mind knows no bounds. You basically said anything that you set your mind to.
You really believe that?
Yes.
We're listening to a conversation with teenagers that was taped 2 weeks ago at Riverside High School in Durham, and we have to thank Principal James Key for selecting the students and making it possible for us to speak with them. There's more of this conversation just ahead, coming up. What high schoolers think they can do and what they think they can learn from adults. Stay with us.
This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. This hour on The State of Things, we're not so much talking as listening. We spent two mornings and two afternoons at Riverside High School in Durham recently to hear what teenagers think about high school. Now, when we last spoke with the older group of students, we were talking about their ability to act as engines of change within their school. That conversation eventually led to a discussion about the future and what lies ahead for them in the adult world.
The one thing that's definitely true about high school, or it has been for me, is that your like optimism or your plans for the future definitely decrease a lot because, you know, when you're in elementary school and when you're in kindergarten, you're like, oh, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to save the world, you mm-hmm. know? You get to middle school and you're like, yeah, maybe I'll help out a little bit. And you get to high school and you're like, you know what? I think getting through high school is enough right now. At this point, I pretty much just want to get out.
You see, it's by that time that we've been, I don't want to say, like, you know, we've been kept down by the man, but in this case, we kind of have. You know, when we're children, our imaginations can take us anywhere. But now, you know, we're supposed to sit up, act straight, don't think about these silly little daydreams, these silly little, you know, promises. You got to be in the here and now and do this math work,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we have to focus on what we're doing in the present. And it just seems that there's no way to, you know, keep our hopefulness, our dreams for the future alive if we have to stay, if we can't, you know, look toward the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it is hard, and I think the deal is that it's more than just a high school, but it's actually, like, a societal pressure on us.
Yeah.
That makes it hard.
Well, these high schools grew out of your society. I mean, these aren't accidents. They're not anomalies within
right.
the group. But it's interesting that you say keep focused on the math. That's what we're trying to do. And yet we've decided. I mean, I think if you look at our discussion, clearly how you do on that bubble sheet has a lot to do with what goes on in the cafeteria and how comfortable you are in your classroom and whether you have to worry about somebody's going to ask you to hold weed or not. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff, it seems to me, has an impact on how well you do on that math test. Mm-hmm. They're related, it seems mm-hmm. to me. And so maybe the trick is to see those connections and not allow anybody to suggest that they're not connected.
Yeah. See, we're missing a lot of that nowadays. Everything's just become so, you know, there's no good or evil, black or white anymore. Everything's just become so gray, mm-hmm. you know. Ever since 9/11, you know, that kind of showed there was some black and white, but then it, you know, a year later it just went back to that gray, and that, you know, anyone can be a terrorist, or anyone can, you know, whether white, black, or, you know, Middle Eastern. So it's kind of difficult. I just want to say I've been thinking about this a lot since like the first time we did this, and you know you hear a lot of the adults say, oh, I feel, you know, they look at some young people and say, oh, if that's our future, I'm kind of scared for the future of our society. Well, you know, personally, for most people, I look at the adults and I say, you know, I feel sorry for you guys, because I see that most adults are stuck in a 9-to-5 job. They're stuck in this rut that they believe they can't get out of, and they don't know that they have the ability to get out of it. They don't know that they have the ability to do whatever they can to make themselves feel better and to have a positive impact on the world around them. And see, me personally, knowing that I can do that, and if I can keep that line of optimism throughout college, if I can try to keep it, you know, maybe toward the end of my life, you know, I know that I will be happy as a person, and I know that there are some adults that understand that. But I just, you know, basically I'm just saying, wake up, adults of today, and do something about it, you know?
Some people aren't taught that way to think like
yeah.
that.
You see, and that's
that
why,
may be their problem
yeah,
in some cases.
That's why there's, I think that's why there's a lot of, you know, kids who don't care, is because they're, you know, there are parents who look like that, you know, who feel hopeless that they're stuck, like I said. And the kids look at their parents and they're like, oh, God, I'm going to be like that when I grow up. So I might as well stop caring now.
Yeah. Stay in school, get a good job like yours?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there are some adults sometimes they can't set the proper example. I mean, it's not like it's their fault. It's just that, you know, it's a whole, yeah, their parents did it and the parents before them. It just, it, you know, it's a
tradition.
Downward spiral sometimes. Sometimes it can go back up. You know, it's just, you have nothing to learn from. And they might be great parents, but, you know, you just don't really have anything to learn from them, and it's kind of hard, personally, because my dad, he did not go to college. He got his GED in high school, and he started his own career. He started a career doing certain things. He's out of town every weekend on business, and it seems to me that, like, he hates what he does. And I, you know, and every time I have, I don't have the guts. Well, sometimes I do have the guts to tell him when we're in an argument or something that if he could just finish high school and went on to college, he'd have it, like, a better job, more pay. He wouldn't have to worry so much about a lot of things. But, you know, and it's kind of hard for me to, because I'm going into college next year, and I have a small idea of what I do, but what I can do to make my college life better for me. But it's kind of hard without having either parent that went to college or anything like that. Hey, I have no experience to build off of. He can't really pass down words of wisdom about college toward me, you know?
How profoundly said, man.
Well, this is the line of thought that I want to pursue, is whether or not the things you're looking ahead to, the models that you're looking at, give you any encouragement to go on.
I'm pretty much along lines with Wayne here. My dad only finished, like, he only, his highest education was only high school, and my mom only attended a 4-year college. But my mom is the one mainly saying no. Well, she's my positive role model in my life, because my dad is deceased now.
I'm sorry.
But my mom said just be good at what you do, and that'll probably take you very, very far in life. And if you have a passion at something, stick with it.
Mm-hmm. I think in my case, neither one of my parents have graduated from college. They've went to college, My dad did business. Right. He graduated from a business college, I guess that's what you can call it. But it's like, not everything has to come from someone who's been totally educated, you know, has this, oh man, he has this GED, or, you know, mm-hmm. oh man, he has these amount of, you know, degrees all over his wall and stuff. He has to be the smartest thing. No. Because my parents, like I said, I'm around my family a lot.
Right.
And my oldest sister's never went to college. But it's like, you know, if I have something, you know, maybe my homework or something like that, it's like there still is wisdom in them.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And because I know from my mother, her grandmother was like her mother because she raised her.
Mm-hmm.
And she learned everything from her grandmother. And my great grandmother, she didn't get any really in education at all. She had, I think, 6 children or something, all boys. But she looked up to people with education, and sometimes that distracted her from really, you know, thinking that she had wisdom, you know?
Mm, I see. But it does seem to me that what the upshot of what Wayne is saying is that when you look at people who aren't happy, when you look at a body of adults, not mm-hmm. necessarily even your parents, you look at a body of students who are looking ahead to an adult world that seems perfectly miserable doing what it's doing, you might have a right to ask yourself, is this what I'm getting into, and why would I work hard to have the same thing happen to me? I mean, do you have the sense that, if not you in particular, that other students might feel this way, that they're looking up saying, why am I walking into that?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I feel that every now and then. But then I just, you know, I think to myself, you know, I mean, I affect my surroundings. I'm not just a bystander. I can do what I can to make my personal life, my quality of life, better.
Or a little bit comfortable. Huh?
Yeah, or comfortable, yeah. So, I mean, you know, people just, they feel hopeless, but they're, you know, they're really not.
Yeah.
They can do whatever they can to change what they're doing. And, you know, personally, for me personally, that's why I'd prefer to go into, like, some business where I run it. You know, so I don't, mm-hmm. so I'm not bogged down and kept down. I have to keep my head down from the boss, like, try to sneak out of the cubicle early so I can go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't even imagine what that's like.
Well, there you go. Maybe it's not the kids we should focus on at all. It brings a whole new meaning to adult education. If it's any consolation to the adults who are listening, I spent 4 hours with these students at Riverside, and I am not the least bit scared about our future. I'm extremely encouraged. On that note, we moved on to our conversation, a conversation with the freshmen and sophomores about their futures. And I asked them, if you could change anything about high school, what would it be?
I'd make it start later.
Yeah. Yes. So early. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
What time you start?
7:30. And so we're in here, and 7:30 comes around, and we're all just, like, out.
What's the earliest lunch period?
10:45
for lunch.
Till
11:20.
11:20, about. Wow.
All right, so what else? So we'd start later.
And maybe make the school bigger so we don't have as many trailers. We just got, I think, 2 new ones on the other side of the school. And then we have the 3 lunch things because, you know, there are so many kids here. I think that's definitely something I'd like to change.
Bigger building.
Yeah. Or less people.
Or fewer people, yeah. Do you worry at all? We hear all this stuff about the economy's in trouble, that it's so hard to find a job. Are you worried about what's going to happen to you when you leave high school?
Not really.
Nah.
I hope that our futures will be good, you know, get to get out and make some money and be, you know, successful. I hope that nothing bad happens.
Again, another thing we read about in the papers, people talk about, is that our high schools aren't preparing our kids properly for their own future, whether it's college or not. I mean, do you get a sense of that? Is that anything you've heard? And do you say, hey, wait a minute, are these guys, do they have it together here? Is this a good enough program? Am I going to a good enough school? Is that ever?
I think just depends on what classes you're in. Because, I mean, I guess I'm in the higher classes, and it's, like, fine, I guess. I feel that I'll be prepared.
Mm-hmm. How far ahead do you see yourself, Alexis?
Let's see. Well, up to college, definitely. I think I'll probably do internship during college. You know, get some experience before I go. I know I'm going to go to graduate school, too. It's like you have to nowadays to get as far as you can to get the best, you know, to be successful.
So you're already thinking about grad school and internships, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what my sister's telling me. It's like, that's the deal right now.
Bob?
Probably in them up 20 years from now.
What, like, do you see yourself doing in 20 years?
Playing sports, like basketball or something. Mm-hmm. Or like building cars or something like that.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And do you know, I mean, do you have a sense of what it would take to reach those goals? Joel?
I think after school, after high school, if I go to college, after college, I think I'm in like sports, soccer, like that.
All right. Okay. Mike, where are you headed?
Just to college. Just thinking of that.
Do you know what you're going for yet? Have you thought about a major or a career? What's your biggest concern? Every day, sort of when you wake up, what's the thing that you think you have to work hardest on, or your biggest concern?
I don't know. I guess when I wake up, I usually really focus on school, so I can go ahead and get my mind set for the long day.
Yeah,
and
then
I think that I try to think about the weekend, try to get myself to the weekend.
Well, what's your biggest hope for the future? Not just for you personally, but for the world you're living in.
Stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
Well, is that a hard thing to do, to stay out of trouble?
It's kind of. It's not really, but people talk about you and stuff like that. It's kind of hard to stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
But if you just, like, tend to yourself, then it's kind of easy.
Is that it? The number one job in high school is to try not to be noticed?
Yeah, because if you try too hard to be noticed, it'll backfire.
How so?
Like, somebody can... Like, if you get 2 noticed and somebody else might not like you because everybody know you or something like that, or they might feel like, well, he too good to chill with me or something like that because everybody know him or something like that.
Is that a problem? Being too good is a problem?
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be.
I'm curious about how you try not to be too good. It sounds like a lot of work to me.
Yeah.
That's the best thing to say is to stick to yourself. Just
stick to your own group.
Yeah, to your own group.
Yeah, stay in your group.
Is that hard work? I mean, do you have to be very conscious of where you are and how you're acting every minute?
Yes.
Well, I guess some people aren't really conscious of how they act and everything, but I guess I am when I'm not with my group. That sounds bad, but... Yeah.
Somebody said in the older group that, what you can't do in high school is show any passion. The idea that you're really interested in something or really passionate about something makes you extremely uncool. Don't do that.
If you're not... I guess kind of if you're not like other people, if you're like really, really into something, but nobody else is really into that, I guess some people could look at you as weird.
Well, for like people to see you happy, like say like if you with a girl that you like, some other girls might tell her that you doing something wrong, or some other guys might try to talk to her because they know you like her and stuff like that.
So don't be too happy.
Yeah.
And don't be too good. And don't get too excited.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of work. Well, you've been great. I really appreciate all this. Put you through a lot. You're probably thinking it would have been better to be in class.
No way.
Well, that's good. Some things haven't changed. Students will still jump at any opportunity to get out of class, even if it means talking to an old guy on public radio. That's the state of things for today. Thank you very much for listening. Also, very grateful to the students of Riverside High who participated in that discussion. Principal James Key for giving us access to such bright young minds. Support for North Carolina Voices Studying High School comes from the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University and the North Carolina Humanities Council. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.